your mic up a bit. See ya.
Hello.
Perfect. Cool, man. Right, well, welcome. Oh, don't kick the mic. Welcome to the Almost Podcast.
Thank you for having me, dude. I'm excited.
That's all right. Can I say your surname?
Say my surname. Okay. I did have a stage name, but those times are kind of long gone.
Okay.
So my surname, put it out there.
All right. Well, good day, listeners. If you're here and you're listening, then thank you so much. I am stoked that you've come back because this is episode two. And this is the first episode that I'm joined by a guest, none other than Leon Schwier. How are we doing?
I'm good, man. Excited to be here. First one.
Yeah, you're the first guest.
What a privilege.
And if all goes well, this episode will be up on the 10th. So
exciting.
Yeah, good times. Leon, first of all, who are you and what are you?
I am an ex-professional actor. Ex is kind of important, as I made a big decision to kind of leave the acting industry this year. I am 26 with a kind of whole shed of life experience, quite a lot of achievements, I think. I think it's got to the stage where finally I'm kind of proud to own my achievements instead of being super duper humble, which I've kind of tried to be for a long time. But now, yeah, it's just about saying, actually, looking at what you've done, just be proud of it.
Yeah, that's I think it's something that people don't like to do. Like, a lot of people don't want to be, they want to be humble about their achievements. They don't want to shout about how sort of well they've done.
Massively. I think with the acting industry as well, and especially with like YouTubers, and like so much is about putting yourself out there, and like this whole kind of culture of vanity is like something that I definitely wanted to avoid. And I mean, the acting industry is just full of people that are, you know, very self-confident, that really want to be successful, that have goals, that are goal setters. And I think ultimately, if I would have been more that way inclined, I might have stood a better chance in sort of rising right to the top. But I was so concerned with coming across as arrogant. And yeah, it's such a fine line. Yeah. But yeah, I've kind of learned to embrace that now, because it does hold you back. Like, being too humble definitely holds you back, because sometimes you kind of undersell yourself, and your opportunities and stuff are dwindled because you're too busy sort of saying, oh no, don't put myself out there, or don't do this.
Did you ever feel like, this is something that I definitely felt, that you like you say, underselling yourself, but I think, like, did you ever feel that your like being so humble meant that you never really spelled out to people that you wanted to achieve the big goal?
Yeah, 100%. I don't even know if I convinced myself that I wanted to do it, you know. Yeah. Not enough anyway, otherwise I think I would have had probably more drive. I would have been like, yeah, like, you can do this, you go and get it. But it was more a case of like being humble was probably steeped in a few insecurities as well, deep down. So yeah, I think now, like where I'm at now, it's a case of saying, I believe in what I'm doing and where I'm going, and I'm not going to kind of make the mistake of being humble again, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I definitely think that, I mean, like I said last week when I was talking about like my journey, that I think part of the problem was like the band never spelled out what we really wanted. Mm. And like, I mean, even across the board of like members, like within the band, we never said, you know, what do we want to play Wembley? Mm. Do we want to, you know, be a sellout arena band? And then we never, like, that never happened internally, that discussion, but also never happened externally. It's not like we were going around going, we want to be big time musicians. And I think, like, I don't know, like, do you think as an up and coming actor, you should have been more, this is where I see myself going? Or do you not think?
Kind of like, you can't, at the end of the day, like, you can't change who you are. I know that sounds mad, but I got to the stage where it just wasn't for me. Like, it didn't tie into my character. It didn't tie into, you know, I had peers who were and still are just striving for success only, like at all costs. They plan everything. They say, I'm going to do this, and I'd have no plan B. Like, I've had a plan B since I left school, and almost that was that more, oh, what if I don't make it? I better have a plan B, which for me makes sense because I'm risk adverse. Like, and once you become completely self-aware, like, I felt I needed to get to that stage because I got so lost. I got so lost in the industry. I went through a patch of my life, probably from when I was 19 to sort of 23, where I was motivated, I was driven, I'd kind of convinced myself that this is what I needed to be like. But it was all just a mask. And I think as soon as the kind of testing times came, the mask kind of came off and I struggled a lot. So I jumped on the ride, sort of riding up, trying to be this person that everyone else was in the industry and setting goals and doing all that. But as soon as the wheels started to come off, my true character showed through, and it was like, I just convinced myself to do all this because I thought it was right. Whereas some of my peers, they're in positions where from a very young age, this is all they've wanted to do. Like, I have a lot of things that I want to do and a lot of kind of a plethora of skills and talents and stuff. And I've never been like, from a young age, I was born to be an actor. And so, you know, at times when it really gets tough, I think that comes through. And that's why it's so, someone said to me once, it's not necessarily just about finding what you're passionate about, but being honest about what you're really good at as well. And you can learn, you can work super duper hard, but without the passion, you're not going to see the hard times through, and vice versa. You can be passionate about something, but without the work, you're kind of not going to get there either.
So do you feel like, because you're like you say, you've got this skill set and you want to use it, you never really, it's not like acting was the final, the big all end all goal. Like, like you just wanted to use this skill set to be like the, you know, whatever you put that skill set into, you obviously want it to be,
yeah,
you know, something.
And I think that was just the case. And like, from when I was like 15, 16, all my drama teachers were just like, oh, this is what you should do and blah, blah, blah. And you kind of, I suppose, yeah, you fall into something that you're really good at. And, you know, you can be really good at it in your kind of local pool of local people.
Yeah.
Then you get sort of thrown into a city and there's more and better people and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's interesting, actually, me as a person, you know, if I'm being completely honest, a lot of opportunities that I've had, as soon as things have stopped going well, the chances that I think, oh, I'm just going to do something else are quite high. And I think that comes from when I was younger, just being praised for everything all the time.
Yeah.
And being good at a lot of things. And so I never like losing, and I still don't. And so it sounds so mad, but you do. It's not great to be like that. Everyone's going to lose at some point. Yeah. Everyone's going to go through stuff that's really hard, and you've got to have thick skin. Like, life's not easy.
It's ups and downs, isn't it?
100%. Yeah. But someone that my whole childhood was just mostly ups, it doesn't really prepare you that well for the real world. So, you know, that's not a dig at my parents or anything like that. But in terms of perspective, and possibly one of the reasons why I am how I am, I think it's maybe down to that. But it was important for me. I knew that I needed people around me as well, like other influences.
Yeah.
Like, I needed to be around positive people that were doing positive things, because otherwise I just felt super, super counterproductive. And I was just like, ugh.
Oh yeah. You're like, the tribe around you definitely like influences your decisions and how you, and we like your perspective as well. I think if the people around you, I think shared vision as well. Like, if you know, because then even those downs, if you know, everything has ups and downs, or in those downs, if you're surrounded by people who are like, nah, you've got this, like, you know, you're automatically like uplifted. Let's talk about like, so like you said, you're like 14, 15, you're doing drama, your teachers are like, this is what you should pursue. So like at that point, did you think, right, I'm going to be an actor? What was like, when you first sort of pursued the journey, when it first sort of started, what did you think in your mind? Like, where did you want it to go? Like, where did you want it to go? Let's just start from the start of the journey. Just start at the beginning.
So, right, I guess what drew me to acting in the first place was, like, the adulation. So, like, being on stage and people clapping. Yeah. And that, I've always been like that. I'm that someone
dopamine
that,
hit.
Yeah, that kind of, yes. Yeah, big time. That's what drew me to it in the first place. Like, I was someone that, you know, is very conscious of what other people thought and kind of, I like being sort of popular. I liked kind of people liking me. And it affected me when people sort of didn't like me. And I think that's kind of normal for someone that's like 14, 15. But I sort of took that into the acting industry, which again, really stretches that. And you can never drop it because it's you're judged by other people all the time. So yeah, at 14, 15, I kind of decided, actually, this is kind of what I want to do. But instead of going to drama school, I'll go to university. So I already had a plan B. I even had a discussion with my drama teacher, like, should I go to uni or should I put all my eggs in one basket and go drama school and really go for the acting? But I ended up going to uni, which was awesome for me because I kind of was doing youth theatre and stuff at the time sort of externally in London, and I made sure I went to a university in London just because I knew that was the place to be for acting. And yeah, university gave me the kind of option to really study things that I kind of might not have been taught at drama school. It was almost like studying what the lecturers at a drama school were teaching instead of just receiving what they wanted to kind of show. So I was like, yeah, reading a load of books on Meisner and Stanislavski and people that I was really interested in. And then all of the other stuff, I was like, no, this is, I could cut it away. You know, I didn't, you know, in terms of like doing clown work and stuff like that. Like, I was like, nah, I'm just not interested in that. I'm not interested in like musical theatre. This is what I want to do. Like, I want to do kind of TV work. And if I'm on stage, I want to do stuff that is naturalistic and kind of, yeah, very like emotion driven and real. And that's, yeah, where I ended up going. I ended up sort of doing a show that a lot of the other sort of youth, I suppose it was like youth or fringe theatre, a lot of the other cast members had agents, and I didn't have an agent. And one of the girls in the cast, her agent sort of called me for a meeting after one of the shows. This is while I was still at university. And yeah, had a meeting from there, and they were like, basically like, we want to get you into TV, you need some headshots done, you need to learn these accents, you need to do this and this, and gave me a list of things to do, but offered to sign me. And yeah, I suppose from then that was a massive deal. Like,
did that happen? Like, so you're at university, you've chosen to go to university, not drama school, because like you say, you're like, that's the direction you decided would be better for you as a person. And then you say you land this show, and then you like somebody puts you in touch with an agent, and then they wanted to get you. So like, talk me through like how, so at the time, was that an aim? Did you want to get there?
Yeah, definitely. I knew by then, because I'd spent, it was Oval House, a theatre, close to Stockwell in South London, that they were doing a lot of sort of championing people from lower income and ethnic minority backgrounds. And I loved what they were doing. Like, I absolutely loved it. And I went in there. The director called me because someone had seen me in a show called Monologue Slam. And that was basically where people do a monologue on stage. It's like a competition, and there's an audience, and you go there and you do a sort of 1 minute monologue, and then you get judged and blah blah blah. And I ended up winning that, and nice. That was like a thing. Like 2 weeks before, someone had said, oh, I know you do drama at uni, like, have you heard of Monologue Slam? I'm like, what's Monologue Slam? they're like, yeah, come up with a monologue. I'm thinking, I don't know what one to use. I don't know what to do. And I ended up doing one out of a film, whereas most people kind of did like Macbeth or... Right. So I did a Tom Hardy monologue and it was proper like grimy, proper... Yeah, so I ended up doing that and ended up winning it. And someone in the audience had obviously recommended me to this director who was looking to recast one of the members of their show because they'd ended up dropping out. So it was literally like... They'd contacted me and said, look, I work at Oval House Theatre and can you come along? It's in 2 weeks we're doing the show. I know it's a big ask, but you've got to learn the script. You've got to meet the rest of the cast. So I ended up doing that. And that was like my first taste of youth theatre. And as soon as I got in there and some of the other sort of some of my peers at the time at Oval House were picking up agents and stuff. And the director cast me in sort of his next two shows. And that kind of made me feel... It was a confidence booster, you know. It kind of felt like, oh, I felt like I was one of the best actors there. And so I kind of like, oh, I need an agent. Like, why haven't I got an agent? Everyone else has got an agent. I haven't got an agent. So that was definitely a goal. And I knew that through talking to other people that you couldn't really get anywhere without one. Without all one. Of the jobs were in their hands, all of the TV work and everything like that. If that's where you wanted to go, you kind of had to have a semi-reputable agent.
Yeah. So that's like a, did you learn that lesson through that experience, like that you needed the agent, or did you already know, like?
I learned it. I learned it through there. Like I said, I was still studying, so I wasn't, I was just kind of seeing how things went at the time. I was looking to be honest, I was looking to finish my degree and then do a master's at drama school and then kickstart my career after that.
It sort of just started.
Yeah, just fell into it by, like you say, yeah, I suppose in a way, just willing to just put myself out there. Yeah. That's what it was. It was like someone offered me the chance to do Monologue Slam. I didn't have to do it.
You just did it.
Yeah, then the director offered me the show. Again, 2 weeks. I didn't have to do it. But I suppose at the time, I was just massively excited by it all. It was the start of the journey. You know, like same with music, same with anything. When you start, you've got such a buzz for it. And ultimately, it was... the inconsistency in the work and the nature of the industry that meant that buzz was just hardly ever there.
Let's talk about that though. Like I want to go even deeper into, so you're at this point, you've just got like your agent, would you cast for this show? Is that what you just said?
Yeah. So I'd done the show, cause that was one of the shows that the director put me in sort of after that. And then, so that led to me getting an agent. And then within like 2 or 3 weeks they'd put me up for an audition for Casualty.
I remember you in that. I remember watching it
and I was kind of like, oh, this is cool. My headshots done. This is like my first shot at an audition or whatever. So ended up going along, and bearing in mind at the time I was like 20, I kind of went along at sort of a young age and kind of thought, let's kind of go for this. I didn't really know much about the industry. But when I got the script through, the character was 15. And I was a bit like, I've got a beard.
I remember that. You were like a schoolboy.
Literally. And I said to my agent, like, I don't think I can do this. They were like, no, it's fine. This is, you know, just shave. It doesn't matter. I'm like, well, this is, I just feel a bit, is there not like 15-year-olds that can do it? It felt a bit fraudulent. Yeah. I was just a bit like, oh, this isn't for me.
Yeah, it's weird.
But yeah, it was a lesson in itself. It was just at all costs. Like, whatever happened, they were like, So when I got there was like, I felt so old. Like,
were there, what, the other actors were like that age?
Yeah. Most of them were like probably between 15 and 18.
Oh, man.
And I ended up going there. They held it at obviously the BBC kind of headquarters, and you go there and you're waiting in the waiting room with your script and whatever, and you see the other people and you're like, but I kind of felt confident because I thought, well, at the stage I'm at, I just felt like maybe I would know more. I felt like I was doing a degree. Yeah, so I felt like, oh, knowledge wise, I've got this. I was confident in terms of experience. And I ended up going in there and felt like it went really well. Came out feeling good. And at that stage, that was when I just held on to every single day, like waiting for a phone call.
Hoping it would lead to something.
Just praying it would. Yeah. But the kind of most frustrating thing about the acting industry is they don't let you know if you don't get the role. They'll only ring the agent for the person that does get it. So say that say if there's another 10 people or whatever.
They, do they put a time frame on that, or do they just...
Well, you just know when they're going to start shooting the show. So you know if you get within a week of that and you kind of haven't got the role, you're like, oh man, maybe I should let this go. Yeah. I was like waking up every day waiting for my phone to ring. And then, yeah, you learn the lesson to kind of just go to the audition, give it your best, and then just let it go. And like whatever will be, will be. So yeah, ended up getting the role. Like when they called me, it was like... I was so happy. Like, I thought I'd made it. Like, for me, that was the goal. The goal was to get onto TV. Like, having an agent was amazing. But my first, like, TV gig was massive, you know? And, yeah, so ended up doing that. Ended up doing another sort of few TV jobs. And I just got settled into the industry then. I kind of was chasing it. I was hungry. I did a lot of sort of other things. Actually, the same director was still casting me in shows as he was kind of
cool. So like on the Casualty up. Did lead Casualty led to more
kind of like I felt like this is it, like, you know, I was so happy, like telling my my mum was so proud, like everyone was like but it just kind of fizzled out after that. You hope it's going to snowball, but it's almost the next opportunity is just another opportunity you would have had, like another audition. And that was super frustrating because it felt like as soon as you made a break, that was going to be it. But it's just...
It's like,
you know,
a series of just constantly up and down, isn't it? That comes back to that roller coaster. It's the same in music. Like, you'd play a show that, like, we get a support slot with a band that we really respected. And it'd be like, oh my God, this is like, their manager might talk to, you know, talk to us, and then we'll get, you know, signed to their label. And then... But then you play the support slot, the show might go really well. You know, you sell loads of CDs, people like your Facebook page, but then nothing. Yeah. And then you get another support slot 6 months later. And it's like, oh my God, this could happen.
But within that 6 months, it's like, I found that so hard.
So what, were you like making a full-time living out of it at that point? Or
no, because I was still...
Were you just doing other things to make... Or were you at uni?
Yeah,
uni
I was still. I was still at uni.
Yeah.
And I'd come out of uni before, I'd left uni, but I was still kind of traveling down to London. Ended up moving back to Cambridge and traveling back down. I'd made the decision, like that was a hard decision to me to leave, but...
To leave uni?
To leave London. Yeah, to leave London, but... Just financially, I was just like, I just can't see this working. Most of my peers had bases in London, like staying with parents or whatever.
Yeah, lived there anyway.
Yeah, and I was like, can I really support like rent with where I'm at in my acting career? And like, the answer was no. Like, I just had to be honest. Yeah. So I was like, I'm just gonna go back to sort of commuting and stuff. And yeah, I felt quite sour about that. Like, even just leaving that lifestyle. And like I say, it was that buzz of everyone was trying to get stuff done.
Yeah.
Everyone was doing, it was a very busy, I mean, it was a rat race and you can get caught up in it, but also it was motivating. And like, you know, you move back to kind of where people are sort of just living quite sort of comfy lives or in this kind of bubble, and you move back and you just spent most of my energy trying not to become complacent.
Fall into the bubble.
Exactly. But then I didn't have those people around me on a day-to-day basis motivating me and stuff. So that was, that was...
Did you never
really
find
tough.
Though, like, I mean, the sort of London hype, that there's a bit of sort of fake, there's a sort of fake side to it though. Like the productivity, I don't know. I definitely came across people who...
Well, like fake it till you make it.
Well, a bit like, you know, they were clearly like trying to get, make something of themselves in whatever path they were trying to do, but almost like they felt like they were one ahead because they were in London.
Yeah.
Just because like, whereas like there was definitely people who, I don't know, were doing just as good a things, if not better, weren't in London. And it was a bit like, does being in London really like make you that? Like, especially
if
you can't.
But like you say, it's almost like that positive kind of everyone, even if everyone,
it's that drive,
if it was like a false reality, everyone else was fully fledged like involved.
Yeah.
And I think I would have said that most people outside of London you know, probably weren't like me. Like, I needed other people. Like, I absolutely needed other people to bring me up and keep me motivated. And I knew that because in the times where I felt like most low were actually in the times where I felt where I was the most unproductive. And I'd like to say, I'd listened to something once actually during that time, and it said like the hardest thing is to have something and then kind of lose it or not have it.
Yeah,
it's not like the journey to getting it, no. Or that kind of struggle to getting it. It's once you get there and then things fall off the cliff a little bit. And that was the thing about the acting industry, is like you fall off 500 cliffs before you get put at the top of Everest. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And that was like, you know, that's why people say you've got to have tough, like thick skin. And
well, it seems like it's like endless just falling off cliff. Like you, it, I mean, it was the same in music. Like you'd ride to the very top, but you'd be brought straight back down the next day. Exactly. And then that would happen again and again and again and again. And you'd just be, I don't know. Do you think there is an Everest? Or...
a good question.
Like, again, is there a final?
The funny thing for me, and the interesting thing about this, and maybe if you spoke to someone that was less cynical, they might tell you a different answer. But for me, I was so, when I was in that space, in terms of this motivated space, getting stuff done, I was so focused on goal setting that even when I got to what felt like Everest 5 years ago, or 2 years ago, or 6 months ago, I then just set another Everest.
Slightly higher.
Yeah, up. I was just like, yeah, let's get, look, this wasn't actually Everest. I'm going to do this now.
You need the next thing.
Yeah, and it was like, it is literally like an addiction.
Yeah.
Like this idea of being successful. And, you know, that was quite harmful to me in the end, because I went through sort of quite a dark patch, which a lot of people wouldn't know about. But that was solely because I felt like I'd fallen off so many cliffs, and that this time I just don't know whether I can start the climb again. Yeah, and that felt difficult. And the other thing is, because when you're at the bottom of the cliff looking at everyone climbing up it and everyone's so positive and successful, and oh, I've got no time for negative people, and you're in a space that is very negative, you just feel even worse.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I'm not made for this. I'm not cut out for this. Like, it just, and that's, for me, you know, at one stage I did think it was fake, and everyone was kind of just masking how they felt by doing this.
Yeah, they probably felt the exact same.
But, you know, I kind of came to think that, you know, there are people out there that are so driven, so successful, you know, so on that way up that they don't even blink.
Literally stop
at nothing. Yeah, they don't blink. They don't have these moments. They literally are, you know, I think they're in the minority. But, you know, for me, someone that is super, super analytical, I overthink everything.
Yeah.
I was never going to be that person. I tried, but I was never, ever going to be that person.
That's interesting. I think there's definitely people out there who, I mean, me and another friend were talking about it, and it's almost that people, if you've got something, And there's something that's quite nice. Like you say, you're living in Cambridge. It's quite comfortable. Like you could quite easily slip into the comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you don't have a comfort zone, if you're literally at nothing, then it's much easier to be like, well, I'm going to.
Yeah,
Because you've known that kind of.
And I think I've got friends that, you know, they won't mind me saying, come from like difficult backgrounds.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the reason they're doing it is because they kind of want to move their mum out of the area that they grew up in, or that
they've
don't
got
want
a
their
really,
kids to
really like sort of deep incentive
and a deep
deeper
why.
Than like
oh, yeah, yeah.
Successful.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and that is what sets you apart in a way, and you can't fake that. You
it
can't.
It definitely gives you like a big drive. Like people I know in that situation, like their drive is
massively, and it's that, and I think that is one of, you know, even though you get such a, you know, it's incredible privilege for someone that wants to do something, it does fall back on this kind of moment of like, do I really have it in me to get right to the top, you know? And actually what I've found now is that you have to go through those failures, and that kind of gives you the drive, you know, like that. Like, I've failed at so many things now, or I've given up on so many things, that the kind of venture that I'm on now, I'm like, no way. Like, I've learned from my mistakes. I understand who I am and what I want and what I need. And I'm definitely not letting this one slip, that's you know? Cool.
That's a really good place to be. So let's throw it back a little bit. You're at, you know, like this sort of stage where you're still, you're in the acting career, you know, like you say, you keep getting jobs, but they keep going down. Like, at that point in time, what was the Everest? What was, like, your, in your mind, like, because obviously, like, goals changed, and I mean, I said myself, like, part of the reason I don't think I'm, like, selling out Wembley Arena is because, like, at one point in time, I suddenly realised that that's probably actually not what I want to do. But, like, there was definitely a long period of time for me where that was the goal. Like, it was like, I want to be a big-time famous musician. So, what would have been Everest at that time? What would have been the big goal?
Well, I never wanted to go Hollywood. Because like I'm a homeboy, I didn't like the idea of traveling and being in America and stuff. And you know, part of that was that, you know, I've met my now wife at the time.
Yeah,
it definitely makes a difference. You know, she was looking to have a family and settle down, and that just didn't really suit the lifestyle. So again, that definitely made a difference, because I had those aspirations as well. You know, I wanted to have children, I wanted to have a family, and actually, that affected what my Everest was.
Because I
was like, well, I can't travel, because if I want to have a family, then I need to be here. So I suppose at that time, my Everest was just to be, I just really wanted to be in like UK dramas and films made in the UK, like, you know, Silent Witness type thing.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got to the level where, like, once I'd done EastEnders and then I flew out to Morocco and Qatar and did a film out there, that was like, this is where my Everest is, like, massively in reach now. And it's almost like I don't, there's not another Everest here. Like, there's no, you know, I don't want to go higher than this. I just want to work more, which is just, it just doesn't happen. It's not part of the industry. You don't, there's no salary. You kind of, jobs come and go. They're sort of 2 months apart or 6 months apart or a year apart in some people's cases. And so, yeah, like you say, maybe part of the reason why the wheels fell off was because what was my Everest? I just climbed it and I got to there and I was like, I'm just, it's not healthy for me to keep goal setting.
It isn't what you thought it'd be.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't what I thought it would be. And also, I just wasn't content.
It wasn't what you wanted.
Yeah, it wasn't what I wanted. Like, I realised that, like, my happiness and who I was just not down to just climbing Everest in this one section of my life. You know, it needed to be fuller, and I needed to have a spiritual side. I needed to have a family. I needed to have all my friendships right. And like, I then became less obsessed with making a career in the acting industry and more obsessed with making my life as a whole more fruitful.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I think that's healthy though. I think that's good.
Yeah, I think it's good. But I don't know, like 5-10 years time from now, things will change again. And I might look back and be like, man, I should have really given it everything. And but like you say, you just make decisions based on your current circumstances and what makes you most balanced now.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's the
I think like whatever you find, I think you've hit a certain age actually, like where you realise what you really like and what makes you happy, like, on a day-to-day basis, and then you start to prioritize those things just because, you know, you want to have a good life.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Definitely. And I think for me the key is to have the long-term goals, but to make sure you can endure it in the like day-to-day, because they're honestly setting your day-to-day well-being and mental health aside for this long-term goal is probably the most unhealthy thing that you can do, you know? And like that, it's the same with, if you want to become an athlete, yet your circumstances mean that you're sort of eating burgers and chips and stuff like every day, and you're not actually taking care of things that contribute to that, you know, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen well. It's not going to be a journey that you're kind of going to enjoy, or, you know, and that for me was the same thing. Like, the kind of mental health and the well-being side of things, I had to take care of that, despite, like, because I was never going to achieve what I wanted to achieve if I was just struggling. And but there is that perception, actually, that it will pay off in the end.
Yeah.
Or, you know, all this, you know, that's part of the parcel. And I heard so many people say, you know, that's just part of the industry. And I was just like, well, that just can't run with me. I'm too unhappy for this. Yeah, yeah. Like, honestly, I'm not sure I can put up with this for another kind of however many years. So, it got to the stage where I was like, if you are struggling, there is literally no harm in realigning your short-term goals and realigning your long-term goals, or just changing. And I'd got myself in such a space where I was so happy, the actual only stresses and the negative side were my long-term goals in terms of being an actor. And I just thought, what would happen if I got rid of that? Would I just be happy? Like, and it kind of transpires that I got rid of that and replaced it with something else, which I'm kind of at the start of my journey with.
Yeah.
But it's kind of worked so far.
Cool. So this is recently though, this kind of realization.
Yeah, like just before sort of, like December 2018, like just before Christmas, it was kind of this realization of, and actually I watched a video. It was like a 5-minute inspirational talk, and usually I thought these things were just like super, super terrible.
Some of them definitely are.
Aren't they? But there was a Matthew McConaughey one, which really did affect the way I thought. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. And basically, to summarize what it was if you're looking for who you are, the only way you will discover it is by discarding who you are not. And that was like, that made so much sense to me. And that made sense for my character as well, because I was trying to be this person, yet there was still so many things around me and that were affecting that, and it just wasn't me anymore. Yeah. And it was the same with the acting. Like, that wasn't me. I can't be happy if I'm like in this rat race to become an actor and, you know, talking about success, making a persona of myself, like, you know, act it, fake it till you make it, like all of that stuff. I couldn't deal with that. That wasn't me. It didn't contribute to myself finding who I was. And so I had to cut it out. And since I cut it out and I cut, you know, other things out, that's kind of become...
It's almost exciting, right? Like,
massively.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm in a very similar position in terms of music. Like, I finally sort of realized that that those long-term goals that I had, from the age of like, I don't know, 13, 14 right through to like recently, actually maybe they're not the goals I want to achieve because they don't make me happy. Like the journey to try and get them, like you say, like the constant like up and downs, the falling off the cliffs, the I don't know if this is going anywhere, is this a waste of time? Like, debate in my mind is like, finally it's like, actually, what if I just get rid of that and then focus on other things? Like, maybe there's other things that I really like would like to achieve.
And the other thing is, like, in terms of like cutting it off or getting rid of it, like, you can easily get it back. Do you know what I mean? It felt so definite at the time and it just felt like such a big decision, but it was almost like, man, like, I'm 26.
Yeah.
Life is long.
Yeah.
Like, we're still so young.
Still
and
got time.
People always said to me, like, oh, especially with the acting industry, people don't make it till they're like 35 and 40. And I used to think, well, I'm not waiting that long. Like, that's far. I can't endure this. But actually, it was a case of, well, for now, I'm just going to change lanes and I'm going to create something for myself. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to focus on what I have and try and be more content. Everything that being in the acting industry didn't allow me to do. And I can always, if I get myself in a position where I'm content and happy, that they're the foundations to get back in the industry in a much kind of more aware way. I mean, right now it seems unrealistic, but it's not definite. Like, sorting yourself out is,
it's
like...
got to be a priority.
The priority,
it's
right?
It's got to be. I think in this, in the modern, like in life, like the way we live it at the moment, like in present time, that's got to... I think there's got to be more focus on like preserving yourself, making sure you're all right before anything else happens. And I think like maybe ultimately like that gives you clarity and what like gives you a bit more perspective on what you really want to do and what you want to focus on. So let's talk about that. Like, let's talk about now. So what are you up to now?
So I've within the last kind of month launched a company with one of my closest friends, which, you know, people have said, is that really a good idea? you shouldn't mix friendship and business, but like, we're very different people. Mm. And where I'm kind of like a very critical and analytical person, he's very chilled and he's very much like, okay, so what about this then? Yeah. Well, I see what you're saying, but what about this? Like, should we try this? So if we were both critical, we would just be getting nowhere. But yeah, we kind of set up a company going into schools, offering enrichment days and workshops, trying to re-engage disengaged kids. I knew that leaving the acting industry, I had to do something of purpose and something of worth, because I don't think it's so bad if you kind of, your aspirations are, you know, to have a family and to spend time with friends, and you get a job that just ties into that. My aspirations were much greater to start with. And so if I was going to replace that and not have any regrets, it had to be something of purpose. Yeah. And so that's where it came from. And we wanted to create a platform for young people to offer positive role models and inspire people. And that was where We Are Role Models was birthed, really. We kind of felt that there was, in the current age, there was so many bad influences in terms of, you know, young people being exposed to everyone and anything like across the world. I mean, when we were growing up,
exposed to anything.
What were you exposed to? You were exposed to music videos. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was probably in terms of media content. I mean, we had stuff like MySpace and whatever, it was still a closed community. You know, you had to accept friends or, you know, the followers and stuff that kind of got into contact. You knew them through someone else. Like, it wasn't this broad sphere of anyone can follow you. You can follow anyone. You get an insight into celebrities' lives. I mean, I remember literally like watching like Run's House, and that was like the insight into a celebrity's life. Yeah. You didn't have anything else.
MTV Cribs.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, that's all mediated. With social media, none of it is. And so there's so many things that have now been brought to the forefront of popular culture for young people that we just felt, can we create a hub where young people that wanted to could plug into it, and it's only going to be positive people doing positive things from regardless of background as well. And that was important to us, and we wanted to go into schools and basically conduct workshops based around these popular cultures and interests. It wasn't a case of going in and saying to the kids, we're going to empower you, or, you know, today's about motivation, or you need to start thinking about your career, or take this personality test and you'll find out what you're going to be able
to
do.
Classic way of doing things.
Literally. So could we go in and keep them engaged? That was an important thing. And we felt like, in terms of going back to skill set and things that we had, it was like, well, I can still converse with young people confidently about things they're interested in, whether that's Fortnite, whether that's like celebrity. Yeah,
it's,
do you
still
know what
relevant.
I mean? I've got two younger brothers, and I kind of felt like I could have one foot in youth culture and still get by. They weren't going to look at me and be like, "Man, you're dated. Yeah. Like, this is not going to work."
You're talking about MySpace.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Like, so all of that we just don't mention at all.
That's cool.
So yeah, we're kind of, we're in schools now, and we're looking to grow, and we're looking to get in more schools. And the ultimate goal really for us is to create a kind of brand or a community that young people want to be a part of. So, you know, we want to in the future put on events where we get role models or people we believe to be role models to come and do Q&As, to perform, and it be like this kind of event for young people.
That's cool.
Outside of the schools, and it's been mentioned a lot, you know, what can you do outside of the workshops to keep them engaged? And for us, the only way of doing it was to try and become something that they genuinely want to be a part of. I mean, yeah. You see so many brands. And I saw an interview with Bobby Hundreds, who's the creator of the Hundreds brand. And he said the biggest success for him was creating that community and this kind of cult following. And that's what we want to do. Cool. We want a cult following of young people that might have been engaged in the sort of classical like education setting, but wanted to make a difference, make a change, or follow people that have done positive things and lead by example
to do that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like plug into it. And in the future, you know, hopefully we'll have people that can come and talk that have been inspired, that have made changes, that have gone out and done this and done that. And we can kind of bring them on board to share their stories, and it will become a space where we can put people out there that have turned themselves around and hopefully inspire. But you've got to be careful, because what we think is inspiring and what, you know, secondary school kids think are inspiring are two completely things. And especially now, most kind of kids and that want to be YouTubers or want to be influencers.
I think there's a huge platform there that's all like it's a very like it feels like it's been around for a while, but it's very, very early stages, I think,
massively.
And I think that like the up and coming youth are like gonna have a lot to say. But like, so in terms of we are role models, obviously you'll have personal goals there too. So like those sort of lessons learned from like the success vision of acting, like what do you see? Like, where would you, like, obviously you've just sort of spelled out where you'd like it to go. Like, what do
in
you
terms
think?
Of, yeah, in terms of personal goals and, like, lessons learned, I think one of the main things is I wanted to create something that was mine.
Yeah.
You just have no, you have no kind of control in the acting industry. You literally, your headshot on a piece of paper goes on someone's desk and they look across all of the faces and say, we'll see him from an interview, him, her. Like, it's literally judged at face value.
Judgmental.
Before you can even show what you can do in terms of talent, before you even get in the room and show that you're a good actor and all of those skills you've acquired and worked on, it's literally judged on your face. And I didn't want to put my life's worth down to someone else's opinion of what I look like.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally what it came down to. Cool. So I was like, can I create something for myself, because I like the flexibility of work. I'm not someone that likes to be tied sort of into a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
Like, I'm quite a sort of free and flexible person, and I've had a free and flexible life.
Yeah,
so changing would be really tough for me. That's not to say that a 9-to-5 isn't perfect for some people, because you know, the one massive factor of that is the stability, the financial stability,
and the routine,
the purpose, getting out, you know, that's huge. And I've never had that. But you know,
I think that's a really cool skill though. I mean, for me, cause I'm like almost the opposite. Like, I need a nice rigid structure. So I think that's cool. I think that's good that you've got that.
Yeah. And it wasn't cool. Like, 2 years ago, it's like, you know, you'd have no purpose in the morning. You kind of, you're at this stage where you feel isolated.
Oh,
where
definitely. If you're in a low period, I think not having a structure can be detrimental.
It's almost like someone like yourself is making sure that doesn't happen to you.
Oh yeah,
you're that rigid and you that.
It's partly why there's certain things I want to do, and sometimes maybe it holds me back a little bit. But for me, it's all about a journey of how can I work out doing my own thing, but maintaining some sort of structure to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I'm working out.
But finding that middle path that balance is so important. So for me to now have something I can get my teeth into on a daily basis that I can control, dictate,
it's all yours.
You know, and the other thing is working with one of my best friends, you know, I get to speak to him every single day, all day, every day if I want to, you know, we're on the phone a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I bet.
And we just got to this stage where we sort of expanded the team and stuff. And, you know, within a month of like launching, we're now put in the position where we need to expand and we need to,
that's cool.
You know, the concept is being taken on a lot and it's interesting a lot of people. And I think that's because it's just not conventional, you know, no. They're kind of, we go in and do something that the teachers themselves can't do. And they, you know, there's a massive sort of gap for that.
For yeah.
But yeah, the back to the question about the kind of the lessons learned, it's definitely the self-awareness thing. Like I became self-aware, I became sort of knowledgeable about myself that I knew I needed to control something on a day-to-day. I also needed something that I could spend as much or as little time on as I wanted to. There was no one person saying, you need to have all of this done by this sort of time. I mean, my wife's a primary school teacher and, you know, like yourself, the teaching, the structure of being a teacher, because that was always my backup plan with a degree and stuff.
Yeah.
But I got to the stage where I was just like, no, I just couldn't deal with the, you know, Ofsted side of things and I mean, all of the pressures on that side of things where you have to get stuff done. That's just like ultimate stress for me. I'm like quite zen when it comes to that sort of thing. I'm privileged because I'm like, man, if I don't have to do that, I won't. But on the flip side, you have to be someone that is productive and proactive, because it would be so easy for me to have this opportunity now, but it all just fall on its head. And I've had two or three businesses in the past that I've thought would be a great idea and have fallen flat on their face. And so again, it's like the learning side from that, the business side of that, how we're going to make sure we take advantage of this, because you can have the best concept in the world, but if you can't execute it or deliver it in the right way, or put it in front of the right people, or, you know, work hard enough on a personal basis, like it's nothing. Like, how many people have good ideas, someone else does it and they're like, man, remember when I said about doing that?
I think that's just, it's the, you could, an idea is so easy to have. The idea is the easiest bit. If you're having a good idea, it's the difference between just like, oh, I could do that, that's a good idea, and then actually doing it. Immediately this podcast, right, for me was like, that's a great idea, why isn't anyone doing that? And then I was like, why don't I just do it? Like, it seems so easy. Easy to do.
What makes you do it though, and someone else have the idea and not do it?
That's the big difference, I think. I think that's a big difference. I think if you can be somebody that has an idea and can take it from like zero, from nothing, to just to even the first stage, you're already
on
like
the way,
you know, you may not get like all the way, you might not be the most, you're not going to be Bill Gates maybe, but you're
maybe
further
you
than
could be.
But yeah, you're in the race then, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, exactly. So. And also to touch on that, have you always been like that?
Me?
In terms of like executing, like, or like, are you a procrastinator? Or
oh no, I definitely don't think, I don't like procrastination. There's certain things in life that I do procrastinate, but it always boils down to because I actually don't really want to do them.
that's the
worst thing, I think, and I think a lot of people will struggle to admit that. But I'm quite willing to admit the things that I know I like doing. I mean, like, for example, running, like, or working out a lot. Like my mum, she's getting a mention in the podcast. But my mum says to me the other day, oh, I woke up and I just couldn't be bothered to go swimming. Whereas for me, it's like a necessity. It's like if I did the opposite and didn't go swimming, my day would be awful. Like and it's, for me, it's such an essential part of who I am that I'm like,
so
I don't even like that wouldn't get procrastinated at all. Whereas like, I don't know, some teaching work, like some marking I've got to do. Oh man, I had to find a million things to do before.
You say, that boils down to because you don't really.
Because it boils down to the bottom of it. I don't really want to do it. But you know.
What about like external influences though, like in terms of, because obviously, right, it sounds like what we're saying is we're prioritizing things that are important to us, and things that are less important are not being prioritized.
Yeah,
do prioritize things that, that now I'm in charge.
Go for it.
Do you prioritize aspects of your life that are always beneficial, or are there, you know, because in terms of balance, like how much do you give to like the social side of your life? Like, are you someone that needs to go out and let your hair down? Are you, because that makes a massive difference, right? Like, if you're someone that really loves a social time, then, you know, the idea of this routine of getting up and doing, like, going swimming every single day, or, you know, oh, I can't stay up late because I've got to get up in the morning. Yeah. I've got to do that. Does that happen? I'm assuming it does.
I'm definitely, for me, like, socializing, I'm good at it when it suits me. Does that make sense? and I can, I don't mean it's something that I almost like work on, because there was definitely a point, less so now. Like these days, I'm pretty, I'd say like socially, I'm at like a nice space. And part of doing this podcast is almost like a reason for me to reach out to more people. Like, I think in my mind, I'm like, actually, if I do a podcast and I'm interviewing, you know, friends or people who could potentially become like acquaintances, or people like you say, you know, your vibe, your tribe is your vibe. You know, the people around you give you influence. Like,
your tribe is your vibe.
There's definitely people out there that like, I'd quite like to get to know a bit, because I think they'd like, that would help me like be like more of what I want to be. But there was definitely periods of my life where I was like totally fine with like little to no social life. And I had to reflect on it and be like, this isn't healthy. Like, there was a period where I was living by myself. I would happily go long times. You know, I'd see people because I'd see people at work, but or like I'd see them because the band had a gig.
Grumpy old man.
If the band hadn't had a gig or I hadn't gone to work, I probably would have just gone, you know, and lived. And I think part of me just sort of, you know, making sure I didn't move out by myself again. And, you know, I've got just sort of different directions in life, like without going too personal, like, is part of that. So I don't become like that again. Because, or even if you're okay with it, I think there's definitely still not that healthy. Like, as a human being, as an animal, you need to socialize. And I think even like you reaching out to me and coming over and like us like reigniting our friendship, I suddenly realized like how good it is to have people like around you, like you say, like who, you know, who've got a drive, who have got goals, and they're going about it. And then even like creatively, like, you know, writing music with someone like we've been doing, like I kind of like it suddenly dawned on me like how good that is. You know, someone's got completely different ideas, combining with your ideas, you get old ideas.
How healthy,
a bit
it is
like
as
you
well.
Working with your friend.
Yeah,
like you,
for sure.
Like you play on each other's strengths, like things that you are not strong in, like they make up for, and vice versa. So it's a bit like when you're going into acting, like the same, I don't know, in a lot of like things that I've tried to sort of do in life, like no one's ever going to be the perfect thing. You're never going to have all the perfect attributes. There's going to be things that draw, like hold you back. You're going to have personality traits that don't suit that, that thing. But if you find other people that can then make up for those, I think that's a real sweet spot. So it's cool that you've got that, like, with, you know, with the We Are Role Models, so and where it's going.
Definitely. But the reason I kind of asked that, I think you've literally hit the nail on the head, to be fair. But I think that on reflection, I had this kind of transition where I felt like leaving Cambridge and the people I grew up with, and going to London and meeting sort of fellow creatives and people that had that energy and that kind of passion or goals or, you know, that drive. And then coming back to Cambridge was the reason why it was so difficult. And that goes back to what I said earlier. It was because, you know, absolutely no kind of, it's no reflection on the people in Cambridge or my friends, because they do offer me a lot in certain sort of spheres of my life, but what they couldn't offer me was what I needed. Do you know what I mean? And so, you know, I see them on like a if I've got time, where I need the balance and everything like that. But what I couldn't do is just spend all my time with them doing nothing, or like, you know, I mean, I've always been someone that's found it quite easy to be selfish.
Yeah.
Not so much so that it affects other people, but if I need to be selfish and something's just not good for me, I'm really good at being like, no, it can't work. Do you know what I mean? And this is not going to be healthy for me. And I think sometimes that must be really hard for the other people in the situation to understand. And I think, you know, now we're sort of 26, 27 or whatever, most people understand more. But it did go through a stage where I think, you know, my old friends just thought that I was just done with them. Do you know what I mean? I'd washed my hands with them and I was just going, I mean, I've not actually really had open conversations with them, which is quite interesting. But, you know, I found, like you say, these kind of other friends that brought me up and put me on a different kind of level. And now, like you say, now I'm in a place where I need them all.
Yeah,
I need a little bit of everything. But I went for the stage being like, no, I'm not going to waste any time.
I think everyone that you associate with, like, will always bring you something.
Like, oh, 100%.
Even if it's not the creative drive and everything, there's another element to it that you need as a human being, like I'm saying.
But then, like, you need it in different doses at different times, you know, and that's, in my eyes, that's what a friendship should be about. I mean, I spent my whole... this type, kind of dark period trying to get out of that by this obsession with trying to find who I was. And like you say, cutting off things that I weren't. And that included friends as well. You know, these people aren't good for me, so I'm not going to... But, you know, once you're through that journey and out the other side, like, it had to happen at that time because I needed to look after my well-being. But after that, you know, I even went back to some friends and I was like, dude, like, I apologize.
I'm sorry,
because, I sort of went ghost, or I didn't kind of speak to you for so long, and that was just so wrong. But I hope you understand why. And, you know, certain people did, certain people didn't. But that, you know, you can't feel bad for making decisions based on yourself. Like, no matter what happens, no matter whether that's, you know, whatever situation you're in, and that essentially informs what we do. We are role models. Like, if you want to empower someone, they need to be able to make their own decisions.
Yeah.
Like, and especially for like kids. And the same when we were young, I've been there. I know, like, my whole self-worth was built up on other people's opinion of me. My perception of myself was everyone else's perception of me. And so it's so hard at that age to have any other perspective. But, you know, I could have done with someone coming in and maybe just planting some seeds and saying like, John, man, you don't have to be like that.
Yeah.
You can just do what you want to do. And I had that to a certain extent, you know, like I've barely drunk alcohol in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and
you'd already like done things that weren't conforming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when I look back, I was sort of like, actually, maybe I had the footings to do that more now, because I was never someone that cared about people's perceptions enough that I would just conform at any cost.
Yeah, just do whatever.
Yeah, like, I was cool with being friends with who I wanted to be friends with.
Yeah.
But then I felt it necessary to maintain my popular side. Do you know what I mean? So it was like this kind of...
find a balance somewhere.
Yeah, this kind of crazy mix, which that's what we're trying to tell the kids, is like, you don't have to sacrifice popularity by making better decisions.
Yeah.
Like, not to be the naughty kid in the class or the class clown, or to shout out or to be rude, or to the way you carry yourself. Like, you can still be popular and set a good example. And essentially, that is... what I continue to do, because I've got two kids now.
That's cool.
You have to...
It's a good message.
You have to do that. In whatever you do, you have to lead by example. Even if it's something that you believe in, someone else might not, you just back it up, mate. Just go for it.
Yeah.
Make decisions. Be who the hell you want to be. Literally no one can tell you anything. And you sometimes have to become aware that some things aren't actually good for you, and then make a decision, or a better decision, about the next time you cross it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I think we probably should wrap it up.
Maybe some knowledge.
I like the underlying sort of theme's just been like this self-preservation, this like, it's okay to put yourself, like, put yourself, your happiness, your overriding, like, preservation first. It's okay. And that's, if that, you know, that is success, right? Like, a successful life is a happy life, a good one. So, maybe that's where we can end it.
That is dope. And it's, like, it's the vibe of your tribe.
Yeah.
The tribe's vibe.
Yeah. Your, is it your vibe? Your tribe attracts your vibe? No, something, it's something about your vibe.
Just rewind in the podcast. Like, yeah, it was right there. You dropped it so perfectly, yeah, and I reacted as well. It was about halfway through.
That's cool. All right. Well, nice one. Where can people find you? Plug a few things and we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, man. So our website is www.wearerolemodels.com, which isn't too hard. Find us on Instagram. Any kind of follows, likes, support is amazing, because we're at the start of our journey, and what we want to do is make the page look as attractive to young people, yeah, as possible. So the more people that support, comment and follow, the more attractive and the more influence we can have. So follow the Insta, which is at wearerolemodelsuk. Add me on Facebook, I'm Leon Schweer, and I'm on Instagram as well. So if you've got any sort of personal opportunities or anything, you know, get in touch. If you want to chat, have a catch up. Or if you're, like we said, someone that is looking to make connections with other people that are doing stuff, then get connected. Like, we're good people and always looking to expand the circle. So yeah, man, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Thank you, Leon. All right, nice one. This has been the Almost Podcast. Follow us on the, follow the Instagram. It's at Almost Podcast. And yeah, check you next week, where it should be another guest. I won't reveal who it is yet, but yeah, it'll be out a week today. See you later.